Welcome everyone to another episode of The Damage Report. I'm John Ederle. Today I am joined by Brett Ehrlich, who has so much energy. And you know how on a lot of shows, like morning shows, the hosts will feed off of each other. I'm the opposite. When he has that much energy, I just go lower.
I also
need to calm down, basically.
Crippling neck pain. And the reason I'm on Thursday is because I have a meeting tomorrow. How sad is that?
A Friday meeting, that is pretty sad.
I love doing your show on Friday because it just reminds me it's Friday. What this is doing is making me feel like it's Friday.
But it's not.
But not only do I have work tomorrow, but I have a meeting in the morning.
Well, look, it's not Friday and I can't change that. I don't have power over time. I'm not a chronomancer.
That's what they say.
But what we do have is a lot of good topics. So we're going to be talking about the ongoing war between Donald Trump and his former favorite media outlet, Fox News. But we've got a lot of other good stuff too. Cenk was on Cuomo. We are going to be showing part of his performance because I disagree 100% with him. So that should be fun a little bit later on. Got a couple of awesome guests are going to be joining us to talk about pollution, military religious rights. And we're going to be closing out the show with a talk on Dave Chappelle and his recent special, which has been incredibly controversial online. We're going to be giving our takes after having watched it.
Yeah.
It should be.
What?
It should be fun. That's a reference some younger viewers might not get, but yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we will be doing that. We won't be playing those clips, but we will be doing that. But I'm going to attempt to transition to the next story to cut off the
insanity.
Okay, so let's talk about the first topic. It's been this ongoing story, Donald Trump versus Fox News. We've been talking about it for a little while. I'm starting to think that I was actually wrong. Not necessarily, but starting to think when I've said in the past couple of weeks that he is complaining about Fox News and their coverage of him, the fact that they will show the results of polls that show him doing poorly, that he's complaining just to put pressure on them to be more supportive of him, which might still be right. But I wonder, his constant threats to move on from Fox News to some other outlet, is he actually starting to consider the possibility? We're gonna look at the evidence. First, what started this, we're gonna have the response from some people on Fox News, but first, Donald Trump had previously said, just watched Fox News heavily promoting the Democrats through their DNC communications director, spewing out blah, 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 terrible, considering that Fox couldn't even land a debate. So he's sort of mocking them a little and saying that it's pathetic of them to have someone from the Democratic Party on if they're not gonna get a debate, which is an interesting take. He says the Democrats are for open borders and socialists. Neither is true. Fox hires Give Hillary the Questions Donna Brazile, which is not one of his more elegant nicknames. They have Juan Williams at all. He attacks Shep Smith. So he's really going off about a variety of people working for Fox News. He calls them hopeless and clueless in all caps. Then says they should just go all the way left. There's no left TV station. It's not going to be Fox News. He goes on to say the new Fox News is letting millions of great people down. We have to start looking for a new news outlet. Fox isn't working for us anymore. And so I don't remember if you'd previously been on one of the shows where we were talking about this, about his criticism of them. Have you been following the story at all?
Yes, I have. I did my homework for today.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good.
A little bit. It is. It's funny. I just like to picture the people who work at Fox News who think they're doing everything Trump wants. Mm-hmm. Like, it is pretty obvious to the average outside viewer that Trump says things, and there are many people on Fox News, the vast majority of people on Fox News, just parrot it and very often, I assume, just like think they're echoing it.
Yeah.
But
or
it
vice
seems like,
versa.
What do you mean? Oh, he
parrots what he sees on Fox and Friends.
And that's the working together. So there's a bunch of people who think they're doing the right thing, mm-hmm. and they're just like, oh, I thought I was on your team.
Yeah, I have to imagine that when they had some communications director from the DNC on, I doubt they thought this is going to be seen as a prime betrayal. Like they had a representative from one of the two parties.
It was Hannity and Combs for a long time, and mm-hmm. Combs was there to be a punching bag. Combs was the other guy on the show who was like, if you think that Mitch McConnell looks like a turtle, and also God rest his soul, by the way, Sean Combs. Or whatever it is.
Did Alan he pass Combs. Away?
Yeah, he died.
Oh, that's sad.
And it's bad of you to bring him up like that. But anyways, they did have a punching bag to be that heel, the person mm-hmm. that they just set up and knocked down. And they bring people like that on Fox all the time.
Yeah.
And so if this is more of a signal that the people they bring on aren't complete punching bags. Mm-hmm. Or that he doesn't feel.
Or that strategy is not acceptable anymore.
Or that strategy might not be unacceptable, but might be unacceptable, but also he is not satisfied with the punches they're trying to land.
Yeah, exactly. So I agree. Now, we're gonna have a little bit more, but I wanna turn now to his appearance this morning on Fox News Radio. He's talking with Brian Kilmeade about this, and Brian Kilmeade pushes back, sort of.
Tens of millions that follow me. And the polls are phony too. Now, the polls are phony too. I mean, well, in all fairness, among my worst polls always is Fox. I have to say that. But I have the worst.
I know you were critical of Fox yesterday. You came out and you tweeted Fox News heavily promoting the Democrats through the DNC communications director, spewing out whatever she wanted.
Absolutely.
So you were very upset.
No, I'm not happy with Fox. I think, you know, people think Fox is for me. Fox is good. Look, Sean and Laura. And Tucker has really been very good for, well, Tucker's a little tricky, but that's okay. But he's been very good. And, you know, many of them, you guys in the morning are Ainsley and Steve and you were a solid, I used to say you were a solid six, maybe a seven, but you're getting much better. You're getting great.
But the thing that people should know about us is that from the time you were hosting The Apprentice, if you and I disagreed, you didn't mind. You know we disagreed. We talked about President Bush.
True.
We talked about different things, and it was still okay.
Right.
So you don't
That's
mind.
Right.
So I don't understand. So if Fox comes on and they're critical of one, if somebody comes on and they're critical of one thing about you, it never used to bother you like this. Now, yesterday, I read those tweets hoping to get you on today, and you're so kind to come on. I appreciate it. And I thought to myself, what's bothering you about it? Because our channel prides itself on diversity and getting everybody in so you don't have to flip around.
That is the funniest thing I've ever heard on Fox News.
But like, yeah, we pride ourselves on diversity. Mm-hmm. No, you don't. Mm-hmm. And it's just all I hear is Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah.
All I hear is Brian Kilmeade, even in this like try to push back framing. He shows up and essentially says, no, it was my fault. I dropped the pot, so he had every right to hit me.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It's my fault that I am being abused daily. Just the language that Trump uses, I used to think you were a six or a seven.
And
it looks like he just read the game and applied it to news media.
That's an interesting idea. We should delve more into that at some point. You were a six or seven. Now you're getting much better. Oh God, if you consider yourself any kind of journalist and a politician said that to you, it should just send like a shiver down your spine. But of course it doesn't.
But they don't
Brian
have
Kilmeade
spines.
Spent the past couple of days hawking Doral for the G7, like literally saying it should be there and he didn't choose it because it's his property. It's
he
just the best
chosen
spot. That's
it even if he didn't own it, said Kilmeade.
And Trump again, it's like, you know what? Not a big fan of Fox. I don't like him. Yeah, I like Hannity and Tucker and Ingram and the whole morning crew. I mean, you've gotten through half the day at that point. How much worship do you need around the clock?
But that's it. But this is Trump's approach, and it works especially with the weak-minded.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Brandon in the control room the other day just said. He's working the refs, and that's it.
So you think it is still just that? That he's not going to move on to OANN or whatever.
I mean, and that's the thing. When Trump says this is just my negotiating tactic, I believe him.
Mm.
I don't think it's wise, and sometimes it can be effective, but it is just a dominant strategy for someone who's not good at like an actual negotiating tactic. It's just a bunch. It's like when you see sumo wrestlers just start doing this as they approach each other, just to try to make anything happen.
Yeah.
And he pretends that that's a sophisticated strategy, but no, it's just a convenient strategy if the one instinct you're capable of following through on is being a total jerk face.
Yeah, well, and let's be clear. We can label it whatever kind of strategy we want. It is just whining. Over and over that the people that support you most don't support you enough.
But it works, and we say
I'm
that
not
he's
saying,
an
I'm
idiot.
Not talking about the efficacy of the strategy. I'm just saying it is whining about how mean everyone is to you.
He gets to act on that instinct of like, I don't feel like I'm getting enough attention, and I'm not getting the right attention. He gets to act on that, and he knows the way to do it. It's just instinctual, but he knows the way to do it to actually affect change on the other side.
And the thing about Kilmeade, his like, again, Stockholm Syndrome, is like, we used to disagree and it never bothered you. We disagree about, you know, The Apprentice, and we disagree about George W. Bush. Yeah, Kilmeade, that's not about him. Okay, you can disagree with him about a thing, but not anything that has anything to do with him because he doesn't have any. It's not thin skin, it's non-existent skin.
And the only thing, I mean, he afterwards maybe he'll go off and start his own news network and it'll be successful.
Do that. Go do that. Okay, I want to show one other video though, because so Donald Trump wants to have his cake and eat it too. And that is going to be on display when he's talking about CNN and MSNBC.
They fight to see who's worse.
Right.
But they don't have diversity, meaning my view. They never put my view on. Although I guarantee you this, they have both, but CNN in particular is begging me to do an interview. And I just think it would be disloyal to my followers. What are they going to ask me?
I don't think you should do an interview over there either.
No, I think it would be very disloyal to people that are Trump fans and people that voted for me and people that are going to vote again.
Okay, so in the span of 3 seconds, maybe, MSNBC, CNN, they won't let on my voice. They're begging me to do an interview and I won't let them.
Yeah, and then also
those two things. And the Fox fans were cheering throughout the entire thing. Yeah, they won't let your voice on and they're desperate to have your voice on. Yay.
It reminds me of, it's a bad, but like Louis C.K. he had on his show, like someone was like, I want to be a stand up, what do I do? And that guy was not funny and he just said, do a funny voice. And then Trump, it's just like, as long as you're complaining confidently, that's all the people want to hear. And they sense strength in that. They're not going to do the analysis, which is so which you did so clearly. They're not going to do it because they've decided they liked this guy. Mm-hmm. He is a performer, so comparing him to a stand-up comedian is not that out of the box. Yeah. And they just really like the energy he gives off because they feel like they've been missing that. But those folks are slowly waking up as Trump's approval rating goes down among the very people who voted for him.
I get what you're saying and I'm not saying you're wrong. I just can't look at that and see anything other than weakness. Whining, complaining, feeling like everyone's been unfair to me when I've been given more than virtually anyone else in the world. That to me, everything about him, his voice, his body language, his history, what he says, what he does, it all reeks. It's just pathetic.
Yeah, it's pathetic.
And I don't see how any rational person could look at it and see anything other than that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back, lots to get to.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
So far in 2019, tensions around religion in our country have been pretty high. Multiple politicians being attacked for slights or perceived slights about different religious groups. Just a week ago, we had Mo Brooks and his comments about Muslims. Donald Trump and his accusations that Jewish Americans who vote for Democrats are disloyal, which I just saw a poll today. 25% of Republicans had a problem with that. The rest were just okay. And so in this context, let's talk a little bit about religion, religious freedom, and how people view the entire thing. And joining us now to talk about it, author Bonnie Weinstein, author of When Christians Break Bad, Letters from the Insane, Inane, and Profane. Bonnie, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me on, John.
Glad to have you on. So first off, let's talk about the book. What is it about?
It's my reactions to the letters that come in to our organization. And this time, while I wrote another book with that, this time I have our responders and what they say to all of these letters come in. We have a wonderful team of writers, and we respond to every single email. And so this time I thought it would be really fun, because I get a kick out of the letters, to include that.
Well, look, if you can accept that sort of hatred, and I've seen some of it, and you know, keep as you have a smile on your face, more power to you. That takes a certain degree of strength. So you're the co-founder of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, and it turns out that if you're working to make sure that everyone in the military has access to their constitutionally guaranteed rights to freedom of religion, some people have a problem with that. What are some of the
they're upset.
Yeah, they do. I've seen some of them. What are some of the common themes in the letters that are sent to you?
Well, there's a lot of Jew bashing. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of misinterpretation of what the laws in our country represent. There's a lot of Christian supremacy. And there's a lot of mean-spiritedness towards both me and my husband. They want me to die horribly. You know, that type of thing.
It would seem to be a difficult thing to balance strong Christian supremacy and wishing that your opponents die a horrible death. But I have seen some of the letters, and they do manage to do that. And so the thing is, your group is protecting the rights of all religions. That includes Christians, correct?
Absolutely. A large majority, about 96% of our clients, are Christian.
And so you said that in this book you have replies from people who are supportive of your work. Can you tell us a little bit about the sorts of things they express?
Well, our team is really varied in age group and in social background. There's a lot of military people that write in. There's actors that write in, and they're all a part of our foundation. And some of them are very sarcastic, and some of them are very funny, and others seek to inform, and it's very informative. And with that, we sometimes actually turn some of these people around, and they end up saying, "I didn't know what I didn't know." And so with that, that's also in the book, and it's very informative. It can be.
And so I want to talk about the work of your organization, because I think a lot of people who don't necessarily pay a lot of attention to what's going on think that, well, both parties are so supportive of the troops that they would never be targeted in any sort of negative way. But we know that that is not necessarily the case. So what are some of the things that your organization has had to fight against? What forms of discrimination have you seen?
Well, the Christians are told that they're not being Christian enough. And they're being forced to come to different events that are Christian related and Christian only. They're asked to go to Bible studies. They're asked to go off post to certain events. Asked as being really told. Mm-hmm. And it's a problem. They come to us wanting to know what are their recourses, what can they do.
And I'd like to get your brief response to something that we noticed on social media. This is from Mike Pence, the vice president, who tweeted out and was retweeted by Donald Trump. During the last administration, the VA was removing Bibles and even banning Christmas carols to be politically correct. But under President Donald Trump, VA hospitals will not be religion-free zones. Message to the New Hampshire VA, the Bible stays. What did you make of that?
I don't want to speak to that as much as my husband would, but what that really means is that they're supporting unconstitutional behavior. The VA is set aside for people of all faiths, not just Christian. The table, the veterans table, originally did not have a Bible, and I think the people that formed that original table would be upset with it on there.
Yeah,
as it represents only one faith, and they're veterans of all faiths, and that have fought and died for the United States.
Exactly. Well, you know, I started off this segment talking about the tension around this topic. If anyone watching this would like to see examples of that, take a look at the book When Christians Break Bad, Letters from the Insane, Inane, and Profane. Bonnie, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
I want to take a short break and be back with more. This guy you might have heard of, Cenk Uygur, he was on Chris Cuomo a couple of nights ago, and they were talking about Donald Trump, the economy, and his re-election chances. And Cenk had a pretty bold prediction that I totally disagree with. Here is what he said.
I think the president's in a world of trouble. Now his polls are down to 40% according to CNN, down to 36% according to Associated Press. He's doing miserably in all of the states, including Iowa, as you mentioned there. The farmers have turned on him. There's almost no one left. And wait till you get to the crash. After the market crashes, he's going to have no support at all. In fact, I'll predict right here for you, Chris. I think Donald Trump will leave office before his term is up. He'll be humiliated, embarrassed, and I know him. He's not going to want to lose, and he's going to run for the hills.
You got that bet all day long.
Okay, let's get after it. Now, so look, Cenk has made some good predictions, and you know, this is in good fun. I could not disagree more. I'm not saying it won't happen, but you can't predict that.
I feel like Cuomo's with you on that, John.
I think Cuomo might be with me.
There's a little bromance between the two of them. You got that bet all day long, Cenky, you.
Oh,
you know, you stop. You
anyway,
stop.
It's not.
I love it.
He's not gonna leave, man. He's first of all. I'm not even convinced that if the economy crashes, that's going to hurt Trump too much, just because I don't think anything in particular is devastating to Trump. He's got a cult base that's durable. They might be more devoted to him if the economy were to crash. And him leaving beforehand, I like the idea. I get the impulse. But I've also heard it before, including from at least one of the individuals in that clip, that previous dates would come and he would already be gone. And so at this point, we just got to take the evidence that we have. He hasn't left yet, and thus it seems unlikely that he's going to leave.
Yeah, I don't think Cenk's right on it, but I've thought Cenk's wrong before. And then I'm just like, how did we raise $100,000 for a climate town hall in 45 minutes?
See,
like that stuff. But I feel those things are completely different categories. I already feel crazy because in that, even in that clip, the lower third teasing who was on the show later, it's like to talk about our reality show president. Here comes former reality show cast member, Real World Sean Duffy. Like that was
he on the Real World?
He was on the Real World.
I did not know that.
He was on the Real World, man. And it's just like, I don't even know what to expect anymore. And it comes back to the thing that I said on election night as Trump and the lead up to it is just with Trump, it's like a fart in a room. You're just like at the beginning, you're like, oh my God, that smells so bad. But then 20 minutes later, which translates to a term's length, like 3 years later, you're like, I don't smell the same. I remember it smelling terribly. But now that thing doesn't smell so bad to me. Did it dissipate or am I just nose blind to it? And there's this has been going on for
analogy.
So long. You don't have like people walking in the room to go, oh my God.
Yeah,
like
because
everyone's
everybody was
been
in
exposed
the room.
To it. We're all just in the giant fart room that is the United States.
We needed more people to come out of comas. That would have been helpful.
Honestly, that's the special we need to be pitching.
That's
is
true.
Interview people coming out of comas and tell them what the world's like.
That's a good idea. Yeah, and that's why on this show, from the very beginning, we have been trying to not allow it to be normalized. That's been our goal. I can't say that we've been successful necessarily, but that's been the goal. And again, it could happen. It would be great if it happened. I just don't believe it. Now, just to demonstrate that this is all in good fun, I do want to give Cenk credit for a prediction. It's not nearly as bold, but a prediction. Someone tweeted to me that he had gotten it right. And it came about as a result of our story yesterday that CNN had decided not to put Andrew Yang on a graphic of polling as sixth place, which he was. They put Beto O'Rourke instead, even though Beto O'Rourke had lower support. And apparently back on June 13th, Cenk tweeted, fun prediction, Andrew Yang will move past a lot of the traditional candidates and move into the top six. I think he's going to even pass Beto O'Rourke. So it's not only accurate, it's also oddly specific in that he beat Beto O'Rourke specifically. So credit to Cenk on that prediction. I have a feeling we're going to have a general election,
Can
though.
Can I just point out how, like, yummy it is that, like, you're not talking to Cenk about this, but rather doing it on your show? Did you approach Cenk?
Do I have to?
It's like, all right, I'm going to maybe talk to him in the hallway later, but in the meantime, let's call him out on the damage.
No, but here is why. Allow me to defend myself. Yeah. Why? You guys use clips of them on Cuomo on the main show when they're right.
Yeah, no.
Why can't we use clips when they're wrong?
I thought you just needed evidence. Like somewhere on like our network, you're just gonna, or on the server, you're just gonna save this. Like I did call out Cenk, and so later you need to do what Anna does, man, because Anna's like literally betting him money on stuff.
Yeah,
for this. Yeah,
there's like a fancy toilet number of dollars.
I believe she referred to.
Oh, she wants a fancy toilet.
She needs a fancy bidet.
Yeah, we live in a fancy toilet, America.
But yeah.
Yes. Okay. I will try to remember that. Cenk, all in good fun. But we're allowed to disagree.
No, it's not.
We are. I got him. John destroys Cenk.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think. But we had a fun conversation on this show about like what Trump will be like in a time when he's like maybe a second term person, or like when the specter of reelection is no longer hanging over him. Like what is a legacy to Trump? I think it's being president.
What I can't wait for is if he is second term, we might have talked about this, and comes time to start, you know, bigging up the next Republican candidate. Mm-hmm. And he will not do that, I don't think. He will not care at all about who takes over. So that'll be funny. Anyway, let's transition to something else that also just happened to happen on Cuomo. So on Chris Cuomo's show, he had Kayleigh McEnany, just big voice in the media for the Republican line, gigantic supporter of Donald Trump. I would say to a fault, as will be demonstrated here.
If he didn't lie, if he didn't take things out of context, if he didn't demonize people for being different, if he didn't make it okay to be bigoted, then he would not get the same kind of criticism.
He doesn't lie.
Look at this.
The press lies.
You don't look at Fox News and call it state TV, and people aren't going to call you out for being unfair to a media organization.
He doesn't lie. Guess who lies? The press lies. And
don't think this president has ever lied?
Take it from Jim Comey, who literally called out a New York.
You don't think this president has lied to the American people?
No, I
don't think the president has lied. You have to answer that question first. He has never lied to the American people.
No, I don't think the president has lied.
Kayleigh McEnany, your credibility will be shot with my audience if you don't back off that statement.
I think CNN has lied to the American people. I think MSNBC has lied to the American people. I think the fake news has lied to the American people.
Has the president lied to the American people?
Chris, let me respond.
Can't answer it.
Jim Comey, literally.
Kayleigh McEnany, do you believe this president has ever lied to the American people?
No. I don't believe the president has lied. I believe the fake news media. Do you believe the fake news media has lied? Do you believe the fake news media has lied?
Interview's over, Kayleigh. Please, if you can't admit that this president has lied to the American people, you will not have credibility with the audience.
Wow. Okay.
But I'll catch you next week on Chris Cuomo.
I know, that's the thing. Like, so look,
maybe not, though. I don't know. Chris Cuomo always surprises me. And that's what I really have grown to like about him. Mm-hmm. I used to not really watch the show, but like he has made an effort to have conversations, like real conversations, bounce back and forth. I think they have some trouble in that show, like really identifying like the Republican type swing voter, because they keep bringing like Anna Navarro on to represent them.
Yeah.
And also have her on as like the moderate Democrat. And it's like she's a Republican.
She is a Republican.
We need to identify. But that's the
resistors
still
liking you doesn't make you a Democrat.
Yeah,
that's not how that actually works. He is surprising. And look, we give him a lot of credit for being one of the only people on either of the two big channels that will allow progressives on. We were just showing the video with Cenk, and so that is good. My advice would be, her credibility was already shot. She doesn't have any credibility. There's no point in having her on. It's a waste of time. It's funny. That's one of the reasons we're showing it, is because it's funny.
Right.
But it's not, you're not going to get anything out of her. He's never lied. I got news for you. There is nobody that has never lied. I support Bernie. Bernie's definitely lied at some point, right? I support AOC more than the vast majority of most things in this world. She's definitely lied at some point. That's because she's a human. He's a human. People are human.
Right. She lied to that penguin about the fact that she was going to stay at that part of the aquarium.
Exactly.
But then she ran to the other side of the aquarium.
And then she ran over. Gigantic liar. And Trump has definitely lied. Let me just show you briefly. You probably don't need to see this, but a little graphic. The overall number of lies, you're going to see in 928 days, he's made 12,019 false or misleading claims. And you can see the number per month underneath. It's trending up. So yes, he's lied. It is absurd. If you can't pass that bar, how are you on TV? And honestly, like, she's gonna be on TV 100 more times this year. There are so many people, I'm not even talking about myself, organizers, activists, educators, authors, there are so many people that deserve time on these channels. And instead, it's gonna go to people who are just there to lie. It's like, okay, we've got someone from this side who's gonna lie to you. Now we need to balance it by having a person from this side who's gonna lie to you.
But it's interesting though, because you say that you fight on the show not to normalize things. Mm-hmm. And so, and even saying, like, here's the number of lies, something very, very obvious. I'm sure in that, I mean, in their meetings, there has to be someone saying, like, do we just keep her out of the show and silence that, or do we have her on and make her look like an idiot?
And have him fight her.
And have him fight her.
Yeah, I get
it.
And that is a philosophical distinction. Some people definitely think you should address it and fight it. And I get that. Yeah. And I think a lot of people are going to see that clip. Maybe it'll be persuasive.
I do just one image of the person whose job it is to count Trump's lies and what their desk must be covered with, which must be just empty bottles of Everclear.
Yeah, probably.
Just like, I can't anymore.
Nothing is real. It's like in those old Lovecraft novels where people's like ability to perceive architecture is destroyed by astral consequences.
Did you get that one, nerds?
Some did.
Good.
Anyway, okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back. Did you know that pollution, bad for you? We'll break it down after this. We've known for a long time that smoking can wreak havoc on your health, especially the health of your lungs. But did you know that the air you're breathing might be doing comparable damage in some parts of the country? Joining us now to break down the results of a new study, Sabrina Mulley, health journalist. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Hi, thank you.
Glad to have you here. And so tell us about this study. How worried should we be?
Well, the study was done over the period of 18 years from three different universities, and they followed 7,000 people in metropolitan cities like Baltimore, New York City. And what they found was that the air pollution in these cities was so bad that it's akin to smoking a pack of cigarettes per day.
Wow, Oaks, that definitely stands out. In terms of the effect, like, this study was on individual cities, but do we have any idea of this sort of pollution? Is it, how many people is it killing around the world? How significant of a problem is this?
So particularly with this study, what they found was that when they did the CT scans on the folks that they followed, the results of the CT scan, their lungs were severely damaged to the point where a lot of these people had emphysema-like symptoms. So emphysema is a disease that really destroys the air sacs of the lungs. And so it's usually found in smokers. So to have such a vast impact on the lungs when you're just breathing normal air is so significant.
Yeah, and it's really fascinating because the time span that you're talking about, this 18 years, is like roughly, at least in my mind, when we began to really take seriously smoking and we started to understand the health consequences of it. I don't necessarily hear the same message around air pollution. Was there anything in the study that indicated that things might be getting better over that time period, that cities or states might be taking it more seriously?
Well, what states are trying to do is they're trying to push the federal government to add more regulations. But like we know from the Trump administration and what's happening now, a lot of EPA regulations are getting rolled back, which is causing poor air quality. And since the Clean Air Act passed in the 60s, air quality has gotten better. But if we keep up this trend and if we keep rolling back regulations and the pollution is getting worse and worse, we're going to see a lot more lung-related diseases. And one thing to point out, in this study, one of the researchers did find that it was incredible that the amount of lungs that were affected were for people who didn't smoke. So normal everyday people, you know, are developing these smoker-related diseases.
Yeah, and so you mentioned those regulations. Let's give people a little bit more information. So you mentioned the Clean Air Act, that they are working on rolling that back. Just today, news broke that the next set of rollbacks on methane pollution are going to go forward. So even more contamination to the air. What about the EPA? Generally, that's been, you know, the area of the government that would be taking this seriously. Can we expect much out of them for the rest of the time that Donald Trump is president?
Well, at this time, I don't think so, for the mere fact that they are, like you said this morning, they're trying to roll back these EPA regulations on methane. And methane as itself is non-toxic, it's fine. But when it comes in high concentrated areas, when it's, you know, active in these areas, it can cause the depletion of oxygen, which obviously we need oxygen to breathe. So it will start to affect a lot of people and affect them drastically. And they're saying that this Obama-era regulation is kind of an overstep in policy. And so what they're trying to do is roll it back and, I guess, let companies aside. And the funny thing is, a lot of companies are in disagreement with this. A lot of fossil fuel companies are saying that, no, the regulation should be there. And if they're not doing it, we're going to take the steps in our own hands.
Well, I hope that they do, and that stood out to me too. I mean, how often do you hear the government going beyond what the corporations actually want in terms of deregulation? That certainly stands out. Yeah. What could the federal government be doing? If we had a different White House, if we had a different EPA, what could they be doing to reverse the trend that we see?
I guess better regulations. The only way this is going to be fixed, the only way to reduce carbon emissions is from a head down type of approach. It's a systemic approach. So yeah, maybe not driving your car everywhere might help on a small scale, but it's actually not going to help in a grander scale and in the larger scheme of things. We definitely need more regulations.
You know, I'm curious, when we talk about carbon emissions and climate change, we generally talk about climate change specifically, but a lot of what we might do to fight climate change would also have the effect of reducing air pollution. Do you see that as a fruitful part of the conversation that perhaps should be pushed more? That if we talk about how getting rid of coal and oil and those sorts of things will make the air cleaner, is that a way to communicate to people around the issue of climate change that might not be a high priority for them?
I don't think that's going to work, honestly. It's because people aren't seeing these types of effects from the coal and oil emissions until it's starting to affect their health, which is why I think this study that came out is extremely important. People are, like I said, are developing lung cancer, are developing emphysema, are developing these diseases that you wouldn't see. And I think when it's starting to affect us on a human level, on an everyday level, this is when the conversation should be pushed. And this is when we're going to start to see, I think, a change in people.
Sabrina Mulley, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're taking one last break. We come back. Dave Chappelle's recent special, incredibly controversial online. Brett and I are going to respond after this.
Doesn't matter what I say. And if you at home watching this on Netflix, remember, bitch, you clicked on my face.
So that's Dave Chappelle, a promo for his special, which is now available on Netflix, Sticks and Stones. It has been controversial, and everybody's got an opinion. We've both seen it, Brett and I. And Brett, you wanted to talk about this, so it's on you.
Oh, wow.
The fact that we're going to talk about it is
on
you.
Under the bus.
I anticipate that. I'm not sure about your views. I think everybody is going to hate me on both sides.
I feel like I'm perfectly capable of saying in this special, there were things I thought were funny and things I thought were really not funny. Like yeah.
Well, I would say not even just not funny.
Right, no, yeah.
So you should understand if you haven't seen it, this is Dave Chappelle. If you're not familiar with him, he's a comedian. He's my favorite, like over the course of my life, he's my favorite comedian.
Because of his views on trans people.
No, not at all. And I remember a time when he did multiple specials where it never came up. But he's a comedian, he's been around for a long time. He is increasingly that sort of comedian where he can't, if you criticize him on a thing, that's what his next special is about. And it feels like, we were talking about this earlier, it feels like a lot of comedians reach that point where all they want to talk about is the stuff that they're not allowed to talk about that they always talk about.
Yes.
They're not allowed to, even though they do all the time.
In this special, it starts with a joke about Anthony Bourdain that I think, about Anthony Bourdain's death, that I think is really, really funny. Mm-hmm. So I think
it's not mocking him.
You're right. So, and the reason I phrase it that way is because there's ways of writing up, just because of the subject matter of a joke, to me, does not mean that joke is off limits. Mm-hmm. It is my philosophy that there can be a funny joke about literally any subject in the world, because maybe the joke is about how that subject is terrible, is a really sad, terrible thing. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's off limits. I just think that you need to tell the right jokes. And my criticism of this special is when it comes to like his entire subject of LGBTQ+, even though he has like some funny structures of jokes, and just because of the structure of certain jokes, you can get laughs along the way. Just altogether, it feels like what you're mm-hmm. talking about, which is this moment that many comedians arrive at, which is they actually found themselves on the top of comedy because it is true that they really like tapped into how most people, or at least millions and millions of people, were feeling at some point. Mm-hmm. But the thing about society is it evolves over time. But if you were on top telling a certain kind of joke, you probably don't want to change. Mm-hmm. And you like everything about that life. And it's totally natural and totally fine. But I think the really good comedians find out what's happening and adapt to it. And it seems like Dave Chappelle isn't doing that.
What I get from Dave Chappelle on these particular topics, and the whole thing is not just about the community, but it's a big part of it. It's half, maybe, it feels like.
About.
Or a good amount, anyway. Is it seems like he thinks everyone feels the way he feels, but they won't say it.
Right. So,
and I just don't think that that's the case.
So here's specifically what's happening is that, you know, he fancies himself like a real truth teller, someone who is really like a thought leader in evolving a conversation, which is interesting because the reason that he left comedy for a while is because he felt he'd failed that. And he felt like it wasn't working. There was also a lot of pressure because he had made a lot of money. He's talking about the pressure itself being an issue. But he left because he didn't live up to a standard that he really thought he was. And then in his own mind, he's like, I didn't live up to it, essentially. So he left. So he does have an ear out for that kind of stuff. It's just that rather than really listen and figure out how the world is, he's just kind of hammering down on these things. And there are people still laughing at his terrible jokes.
Oh, yeah,
and those people really want they're at the special and they tell you ahead of time, the warm-up comedians, like, laugh at everything. Like, that's how specials work. And then there's people who really do believe that. And there's always going to be enough people for Dave Chappelle who are laughing at jokes like that he can fill a room with them. But the problem is he thinks that those people laughing in that big room are still how the entire world is, and they're not, and they moved on.
I've said, I know people disagree with me. You disagree with me, I think. I think he is the best comedian in terms of being able to structure a story, like not just a setup and a punchline, but a story with multiple payoffs. I think he's the most talented in that area. It's just, how are you going to divvy up your time? What are you going to talk about? There are a lot of things to talk about. Not all of them are your grievances about the thing you were criticized for. And as a person who's liked him for a really long time, I just wish he would spend more time talking about all the other things and not focusing special after special after special on these things where I just think you're behind the times and you don't understand the consequences of what you're saying on a lot of individuals who have been victimized, attacked, harassed constantly for people. Like, you're doing it to be funny and to joke, but a lot of people who are saying similar things are not doing it for that reason.
Right.
And when Dana Loesch is tweeting about how awesome your special is because you're not bowing down to cancel culture, maybe that's not a good sign. And maybe you've gone a little bit too far in that direction.
No, but yes, I agree with you. And this is the Dave Chappelle is in this camp. It looks like Bill Maher is in this camp.
That's his entire camp.
Folks on the right have a similar gripe, which is like, you're not letting me say what I want to say. And the answer is no. What you're saying is just bad, and we're disagreeing with it.
Yeah.
But they end up with these weird bedfellows.
Yeah. Yeah. As perhaps like the most extreme version of that. A lot of white, I'll say racists, they always ask, why can't I say the N-word? Why do you want to say that?
Well,
you
there's also an answer.
There's also an answer. But I'm saying your desire to say something that has no merit on its own for you to say, it's just because you feel you've been denied something, that's not necessarily the principled position that you think it is.
And then I was listening to Nikki Glaser's morning show on the radio today. And they were like, he wants you to think he's cool.
I still thought that the special was very funny,
it when he does his little walk around and his slap, and they pointed this out, it's training the audience to laugh at your jokes, that's what it is. He's doing it to try to train you to laugh, and it's not okay.
Okay, I wish we had more time. Thank you as always, great to have you on. Thank you everybody for watching. We will see you tomorrow to close out the week.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.